roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty. This is a special UFC 258 preview show with our colleagues Simon Head and Dan Tom. Dan Tom will be joining us shortly. So it's a little different from Junkie Radio, where we usually do a catch-up of the latest news or recap of the events that take place. And we do you know, previews of upcoming events, except this one, I think we're going to dive in a little bit more on the gambling side. And we'll also lean on the guys that prefer not to gamble to just maybe give us their prediction. So it's going to be fun. We're going to be with you for the next 30, 45 minutes, depending how quick we can get to through some of these big fights on the upcoming pay-per-view. And a quick reminder, Goz and I will be hosting a UFC 258 watch-along tomorrow night, Saturday, February 13th, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Why do I always give all those details? Because in Oceania, it'll be February 14th for you all. But if you circle back to the 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, then you know what I'm talking about. Goz and I always duck in there early anyway. So really, join us around 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll do a couple of prelim fights with you, and then we'll jump into the main card, which at the top of the bill includes Kamaru Usman, the UFC's undisputed welterweight champ, as he defends his belt against Gilbert Burns, the number one contender. So we got the whole team locked and ready to go. We'll be right back. It's a special Junkie Radio on a Friday, February 12th. All right, I definitely want to give the guys a quick plug to start and at the very end, because it means a lot for them to take a little bit of time out of their busy schedules to join us. So Simon Head's been with the Junkie team for a couple years now, but what I noticed was I saw him on Facebook getting active again on his journo site. It's at Simon Head Sport if you want to give him a like there on Facebook. I think a lot of us are going to be getting more active there. So Simon, good stuff there as always. You're one of the best in the business, man. You're definitely one of them pioneers out in the UK for covering MMA all these years.
Appreciate it, mate. It's good to be on. And as you say, you know, busy schedule and all that. It's 9 p.m. here. I've got nothing else to do. I'll be sat in front of Netflix. So much rather be talking fights with you guys.
All right. And of course, there's my man, Dan Tom, our fight analyst at MMA Junkie. You got to check out his Protect Your Neck podcast that drops every Friday, sometimes on a Thursday night, sometimes on a Friday, depending on his workload. And you even get some bonuses sometimes post events. So always keep an eye on Protect Your Neck podcast. The easiest thing you could do is subscribe, give him some 5-star love there. He does an excellent job breaking down the fights and putting you in a good position to make some dough, or at least knowing what the hell each guy or gal is bringing to the table on fight night. Welcome, Dan.
Hey, it's an honor to be here. It's great to have the old school gang, the new school gang, the gang across the pond, all together, some of my favorite faces.
Love it. All right, guys. So let's get into it, man. I want to focus, obviously, on the main card, and then depending on how many minutes we have left from the 30 to 45 we're committing to this afternoon, we'll look down into the prelims. I think we're down to 12 fights overall. So starting off the pay-per-view tomorrow night, from what I'm hearing, because there's been a lot of moving around, Julian Marquez versus Macky Patolo. Julian Marquez hasn't fought in like 3 years. Macky Patolo has. It's as simple as that. But Julian Marquez is minus 160. So, you know, depending on what house you look at, Macky Patolo comes back at about plus 140. We're very familiar with both of these cats because they're Vegas guys. So anyway, Dan Tom, what do you think about this fight, man?
Yeah, I got bias on both sides of this fight. Maybe you guys do too, to a certain extent, right? I mean, being in Vegas so long covering the fights. And, you know, even in this pandemic era, man, you guys are still churning out some of the best interviews. Yes, I'm referring to MMA Junkie Radio. But, yeah, Marquez has co-hosted some episodes, and I that's probably where I met him, in fact, you know, through that. And Patolo, I don't know, even though he's a Hawaiian, I know we're all supposed to know each other. But, you know, my man Eric Nixick, you know, our guy over there at Extreme Couture will be in his corner. And I think, like, Hawaiians from Extreme Couture have all been underdogs, like, the last three, and I think they've all cashed. I believe the last three at least. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I'm picking the favorite Marquez here. He's been off for a while, but he's a dog. He's fought in that small cage before, both in Contender Series. Granted, a different venue. You guys might have been at that show, George and Goes, where he fought Phil Hawes, I believe. And he's fought in the smaller cage of tough finales in the UFC before. But more specifically, even though he's, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis, he's a lot smarter than meets the eye. There's a reason why he's kind of delved into the podcasting stuff, but also you see it in the work inside the cage and the submission work. I think he's underrated there. You know, we saw Darren Stewart catch Maki Patolo speeding. I think that could happen here. Either way, I'm going to feel good for whoever wins. I'm going to feel bad for whoever loses here.
Right on. All right, Simon Head, how do you look at this fight, and who do you think is going to win on Saturday?
The big question is, the X factor is Julian Marquez, isn't it? I mean, he was in great form coming into the UFC. Let's not forget who he beat to get into the UFC. He beat Phil Hawes, who's now got a ton of hype on him right now. He knocked him out on the Contender Series 3 years ago, or 4 years ago now almost. He then finished my fellow countryman, Darren Stewart, at UFC on Fox 26. Lost a split to Alessio De Chirico, but he was looking pretty good. You know, it was a good competitive fight. But he's been out for all that time since. And how's he going to look on the way back, having been out for just such a ridiculous amount of time? You know, he had to deal with a really strange injury that he's had to take a lot of time over. Now he's back. He was in good form this week during all of the media availability with MMA Junkie. You can check all of that out on the MMA Junkie website and on the YouTube channel, of course. I think, yeah, I'll be leaning towards him because I think he was in better form. I mean, looking at Mackie's form, I think he's lost three of four since he joined the UFC. So assuming that Marquez can hit the same sort of level that he was at prior to his injury, I think I'll be leaning towards the Cuban Missile Crisis on this one.
All right. How about you, Goz? Who do you like in this one?
I think what it really comes down to is discipline in this fight, right? When you look at the type of fight that Maki Patolo likes to fight, he has this knack of dragging other people into his style of fight. And I could see him doing that to Julian Marquez if Julian isn't intelligent and just patient. I know you haven't fought in a long time. I know you want to go out there and you want to show off what you can do, but you can't get mixed up in the type of fight that Maki Patolo is going to want. Maki Patolo is going to back him down early. I think Julian needs to kind of use a little bit of his intelligence, his footwork, really pick and choose what shots he wants to throw out there. But if the fight gets sloppy, I think it's going to start going towards Patolo's way. So I think for Julian Marquez to be successful here, I think he's got to be a little patient. I think he has to be intelligent in that fight and just not get wrapped up in the way Maki Patolo likes to fight, because he does that to just about everyone.
All right. Goz, are you going to give a prediction, or are you just giving a breakdown? Because there's no pressure, honestly.
I like Julian Marquez because Dan Marquez hit the nail on the head. Yeah, he is very, very intelligent. And a lot of people see him kind of goof off and joke around. But really, mm-hmm. when you talk to him, that guy's a student of the game. And some of the guys that he surrounds himself with, like a James Krause, those guys don't let you forget things. They get on you. So I think he's going to come in with a really good game plan. And as long as everything holds up, which it seems like everything with the injury is now past him, I think he's going to have a good shot to win this fight.
All right. Yeah, I'm putting myself down for Julian Marquez as well. Julian Marquez does seem like the type of guy, even before he got injured, he did seem like a student of the game, a student of the psychology of the game, a student of the way the game has evolved. He hesitates to move around and pick somebody's brain, which is a good thing and a bad thing, because a lot of people will say, well, I see him at this gym, I see him at that. No, he's just trying to find a spot where he can get better, and he always puts his ego to the side. Strong as an ox, that guy. I think if this fight were to, if they meet in the middle, which Dan brought an excellent point on that small octagon, there's, you know, some action's going to be created. I think that's where I like Maki Patolo's best chances. But That said, I just think the longer the fight goes, if it goes the distance, it's because Julian is playing to his strengths, mitigating Patolo's weaknesses. I have Marquez in a decision, and I think it'll be 15 minutes that he enjoys because he's going to need it to make up time for all the time that he's missed. I mean, if he goes in there and gets something done quickly, I don't think he would hate himself for it. That's for sure. But this guy has been itching to fight for 31 months. So I like Julian Marquez in a decision here over Mackie Patolo. But make no mistake, the dog is live. So we got myself, Goes, and Simon Head under Marquez. Dan, do you want to give a prediction, or are you just okay with the breakdown? Again, no pressure either way.
Apologies. I said put me down for Marquez by submission. Okay.
Got it. All right. All right, guys, let's go to the next one. Sorry, I'm getting my stuff down here. The next fight is Bobby Green. Bobby Green is going to be facing Jim Miller. And this is a swing bout, so it's what they used to call it. It's the old school guys get that one. Bobby Green minus 250, Jim Miller plus 210. Basically, they used to call it that because when they had time constraints back in the day, if the first one went the distance and they had two title fights, then that one was sacrificed, and sometimes they would fit it in at the end. But they haven't done that in 10 years, so I'll stop mentioning it, honestly. Now, two veterans of the sport, you know, and two guys that are definitely in the second halves, maybe the third quarters of their career. Goes, how do you break this fight down between the favorite Green and the underdog Jim Miller?
This is an interesting fight. We spoke to Jim Miller not too long ago, and him himself said he needed a little bit. He wished he would have had a little bit more time to prepare for Bobby Green. But here's the thing. People who prepare for Bobby Green, I almost think that's your mistake, because you just can't prepare for him. He is what I like to call chaos, but controlled chaos. Bobby knows what he's doing, and it may seem chaotic to a lot of people, but the guy knows absolutely what it is he's trying to do. He gets in your head and he talks to you, but I don't think anything like that is something that Jim Miller hasn't seen. But the style that Bobby Green has, I think it takes a while for fighters to get used to it, to figure out what's actually going on. I think where Jim can maybe have some success in this fight is if he can close that distance, maybe get the fight to the ground. But the thing is, a lot of people have tried to do that to Bobby Green in the past, and Jim, being an older fighter now, lacks a little bit of that explosion, maybe some of that timing. So I think it's going to be very difficult for him. I'm going to go with Bobby Green by decision, but I think Jim Miller can maybe steal a round here and there. But right now, I think with speed and just throwing punches from different angles and the power, I think Bobby Green might get this one.
I'm with you, Goes. I think he's got that speed advantage. I think he might be able to exploit that, but not initially, because that first round, man, Jim Miller is something else. Jim Miller, look, I've seen him go a tough three rounds. And then I've also seen him gas out after like at the end of the first, or not gas out, but really, really start to wind down. And then, of course, I always talk about that breather you get between rounds one and two, and you come back out because these are top-notch professional athletes. But then they start to fade a little bit earlier in the second round than they did at the end of the first round. It's not to say they didn't put in the hard work. It's just it's a last-minute fight. Now, he knew he wanted to fight sometime soon. But at the same time, when we were talking to him, he did show a little bit of uncertainty, like, okay, I did want to fight, but I probably could have used a couple more weeks. I think that might make the difference. I think Bobby Green is one of those fighters that one thing that hurt him was he didn't have enough consistency throughout his career. He had too many long spells where he didn't fight. And now he's fighting, and now he's been able to compartmentalize and say, I'm not even worried about a title. I just want to get paid. He's been making money. He looks happy. I think the speed is going to cause some problems. I think Bobby's actually built for 15 minutes, to be honest, though he'll probably tell you otherwise that he's always on the hunt. But still, I like Bobby Green in this one. And I think we may – no, I'm going to go decision again. And it's weird because that's two fights in a row that I'm saying that, and it is the smaller cage, and I'm hoping for finishes, but – I'm keeping it real. I mean, Jim Miller's not too easy, not the easiest guy to just go out there and blitz through. So Bobby Green by decision for me. How about you, Dan? Who do you like in this fight?
First things first, I'm not sure if this fight is still going on. I haven't checked for an official update, but between the weigh-ins and face-off, Green apparently fainted and doctors were tending to him. Given their general protocol, last time this happened was at the Apex. I believe it was a Kevin Holland opponent that happened to, right? I believe it was Trevin Giles. So that fight could be pulled. That being said, two apropos points, though, even if it is pulled, that is worth mentioning here to build off of This is one, your guys' Jim Miller interview was awesome, as is. You guys have great rapport with him. But Jim, for better or worse, is almost too honest, right? And the vibe that I got from the interview he did with you guys was that, you know, he was really not kind of ready for this fight. They really didn't give him notice. And even though he was my worry because my pick was going to be Green, like George by decision, apparently that maybe that short notice affected Green more. Maybe this was a tough weight cut for him, right? If the reports that came out that he fainted is true. And then lastly, but not leastly, just a cite from the Gambling Edge, still relevant, even if this matchup is not. George cited that he wanted to go to decision despite it being the small cage. And even though I'm still stressing the small cage for stylistic analysis, I will cite our friend of the show, Joey Odessa. I don't have the exact stat, but pretty much if you've been betting unders, you've been losing money in the small cage. So just because it's a small cage doesn't mean the action is going to go under, nor necessarily end inside. So really be careful. I've gotten burnt just last week doing that. So I just wanted to note and shout that.
Wow. Well, we definitely hope for the best for Bobby Green. You know, right before I was looking at my parlays and things like that, and I didn't hit that good old refresh on MMA Junkie. But yes, he did collapse. I can't imagine this fight's still going to go forward. But we definitely hope for the best for Bobby. And like I mentioned it before, he just seems like in a really, really happy place. And it all comes from being an active fighter. So I hope he can bounce back from this quickly. All right. So I guess we're just going to skip this one. You guys haven't heard that he is going to fight, right? I think this one's got to be done.
I think what's likely to happen is that fight. If I was a betting man, I think this fight's probably going to get pulled. I mean, Dana White told MMA Junkie backstage about Bobby Green passing out, said that they're doctors are rehydrating him now. Now, in most circumstances like that, it's probably going to involve an IV. And as soon as an IV is involved, that pretty much scratches him from the fight. Because as we know, Nevada Commission, USADA, IV not permitted when it comes to combat sports, and certainly with the UFC. So if he is being rehydrated using an IV, if his condition is considered serious enough that he needs one, then obviously that automatically scratches him from the fight. If he just took a bit of a funny turn, had a bit of a dizzy moment, and they're just rehydrating him sort of the normal way, then maybe. But I think from a sort of a precautionary sense, I would expect this fight to be pulled at this point based on the fact that Dana's come out already and said that he passed out. I think it would be a tricky look for the UFC to put him back on the card at this point.
Simon, are you coming in on 4K or what the hell? I know you got the Quint shirt on. Steven Spielberg, did he give you a camera too?
No, I've just got a little webcam on top of my monitor. So it's all doing all right. People say I've got a face for radio. So really I should have just like a fuzzy screen instead of sharp picture quality. Cause you know, you're getting to see everything you don't need to right now, but, you know, try and be slightly professional if I can.
It's awesome. For me, this is a lot of fun, by the way, guys, because Dan Tom for many years co-hosted with us there at the Mandalay Bay in Vegas. And then Simon, we're used to seeing him over here, and he's usually asking us spinning back click questions. So it's fun to do this with you guys. It's like old times. I like it.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking, guys, as you guys were talking, think about all the times where a fighter has either gotten a gentle escort to the scale, and they're standing there and they're shaking and they're asking them 5 seconds, baby. You know, Heidi Dean, I think that's her name. She's always asking for that picture and for them to pose, and then they get off and then they finally make it to the rehydration station for the right type of intake. Think about how many times you've seen that, and maybe they've come close to the faint, you know, and I'm talking about big, high profile fights. And like Simon was saying, he's right. I mean, you get to that IV stage and no more fighting, you know, so geez, that's something else to know that, you know, that sometimes they get there by the skin of their teeth, not just the weight, but them actually having getting the pass and the clearance to fight the next day. Now, that 36-hour weigh-in rather than the 24-hour weigh-in, I bet you that's coming more handy than we think.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, it's a shame if the fight does get scratched, because stylistically, it's a great matchup, right? Jim Miller and Bobby Green, two fighters you know are always going to bring the excitement on fight night. And Bobby Green's been in good form. He had four fights in 2020. It felt like he had a bit of time away. Came back, had four fights last year, went 3-1. Lost the last one on the cards, but you know, he seemed in a really good place this week. Media day, he was on fire, just dropping gags all over the place. So he looked like he was in fine fettle, looking to get himself into position for a big performance this weekend. So sad to hear that he took a bit of a bad turn after the weigh-ins today, but you know, he can come back and fight another day. I'd rather see that than him try and battle his way through and end up having something not very good happen on fight night, because these guys dehydrating themselves for weigh-ins at the best of times is not great. You know, the weigh-in debate is something we've spoken about for many, many, many months, many years even. But when someone's that bad after getting on a scale, they probably shouldn't be getting in a cage a day, 2 days after.
Two guys that have almost 30 years of professional fighting experience between them, well-respected, taking a fight with 3 weeks, why can't they somehow agree on 158 or even a round number of 160? It's not going to hurt their 155 stock. They're killers, but they're not ranked killers. They're not contenders. So it's not like it really hurts, you know, is anything that we can deem unfair in their quest to the road to the title. They're not there yet. I would think that I've seen this pass given all the time, where one guy takes the fight kind of on late notice and the other guy agrees, okay, you know, I mean, he is coming in late and I don't have to cut an extra five. Why couldn't have this been spotted earlier in the week?
Don't know. Yeah, it's a like tricky one. Oh, go on, Dan. Sorry.
I was just going to say it was James Krause versus the Canadian fellow that the late, great Sean Tompkins coached and was married into the family, Sam Stout. And James Krause, right? And they agreed, or maybe it was either them or KJ Nunes, or all three of them, in fact, have different scenarios where they've done that exact thing, George. And I get your sentiment there, although I will say for the Jim Miller fan in me, he is that record holder, right? So every win he can get at 155, while Donald Cerrone is still walking this planet and active, they've kind of got a race going on. However, what I will say back to your guys' interview and touching on your sentiment overall, George, where I agree, before I bounce it to Simon, as I rudely cut him off there, was that basically that I just wish they gave these guys a little more respect. I know it's the pandemic era, but I believe Jim Miller said his last two or three fights were kind of like that. And man, like you think about through the Brock Lesnar years, Bobby Green's put on some great fights, underrated fighter. Obviously I love Bobby Green, but through Brock Lesnar, Ronda Rousey, Conor McGregor, all these big moguls came and went. Meanwhile, who was on the undercards breaking their back, giving us fights of the year against Joe Lozon at 155, where John Anik was making his first UFC pay-per-view? Jim Miller was freaking there, man. So it really annoys me that they're giving him the Joe Silva treatment. Without the Joe Silva respect, Joe Silva was a bit of a hard A, right? But he respected Jim Miller. So hopefully they give them both some room for the next booking after this.
And in terms of the weight thing, I was in Dublin for a Bellator show probably a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. It was Ryan Scope versus Peter Queeley. Now, they both compete at 155. And literally the day of the weigh-in, or maybe even the evening before the weigh-in, the pair of them just met each other in the hotel, had a gentleman's agreement between them. Then they went to Mike Mazzulli of the commission, the Mohegan commission, who were overseeing that event, and said, look, we're both happy to do this at 170. If you're happy, we're happy. We'll make weight nice and safe. Everything will be good. And that's what they did. They booked the fight at 170, and it was a great fight. Great comeback win for Peter Queeley. And even on this card, Brian Kelleher, check out the interview from MMA Junkie this weekend, talking about this very topic. He's fighting Ricky Simone this weekend. They're both bantamweights when they're at their optimum weight. They're fighting at featherweight because Simone's making like a 3-week turnaround for this. Ordinarily, would have been at 135. But Simone's team said, can we do it at 45? Brian Kelleher's like, yeah, I don't need to cut weight. This is all good for me. I'm happy at 45. So we're actually seeing it on this card this weekend on the prelims.
Yeah, and if you guys recall last year when Conor McGregor fought Donald Cerrone and he was doing it at 170, but the stock was working towards making McGregor a contender at lightweight, meaning should he win, he could get a title shot. I mean, we're hearing that. And then people asked Dana, he simply said, because they wanted to fight at 170, like it was no big deal. But again, I've explained many times, that answer is for casual media. That answer is for casual fans. Hardcore media are going, wait a minute. Why are you making the mother cats go to 155 and drain themselves, you know? And, you know, you have weight classes for a certain reason, and you have roads to the title for a certain reason. And that includes, making weight. Imagine Lineker when he, who was it, Bagutinov, one of those guys he beat, but he didn't make weight and he didn't get a shot at the title, so he moved to 35. But imagine if he would have said, like, hey, for this one, can I come in at 130? You know, and if the opponent said, yeah, sure, and did, he would have preserved his title shot, I guess. I mean, I don't know if they would have given them the permission or not, but I'm just saying there's so many cases we can cite over the years where it seems like it's no big deal, especially when it comes from the UFC side of things. Dan, great point about Miller, though. Maybe he wants to break records, and maybe it just wasn't on the table. I don't know, but I certainly hope that late notice fights, more of this can happen. You know what I mean, guys? All right, let's go to the co-main event. The co-main event is Alexa Grasso versus Macy Barber. Almost the flip of the coin. Right now, Alexa Grasso is minus 117. Macy Barber plus 107. So we're not even going with round numbers. But, of course, different houses out there have her as high as minus 129, minus 125. So always shop for the best possible odds, whatever benefits you. I'm just going with the first one of the left on bestfightodds.com right now, and that's five dimes. All right, so minus 117 for Grasso, plus 107 for Macy Barber. Let's go with Simon Head first on this one.
This is an interesting one because I think we've got a situation where you've got one fighter who is kind of established in the division, but he's coming off a loss and a lengthy injury period. And now we've also got Alexa Grasso, who's stepping up a weight class. She fought flyweight in her last appearance, picked up a win, but now she's looking to pick up some momentum. So how will she do against someone who can really bang at the weight class? You know, Macy Barber has got some serious striking power for her division. The main thing for me is Barber coming back from the injury. I think if she comes back fully fit, I think there's some betting value in Macy Barber getting an inside the distance win. I really do. I think normally when it comes to the women's divisions, especially the lighter ones, betting the over on the rounds is always a pretty decent route to profit. A lot of the fights tend to go the distance. I could see Macy getting a late stoppage in this fight. I've just got a sneaking suspicion she's going to come back in good form. She's obviously going to be absolutely itching to get back into the swing of things and move towards her goal of trying to become the youngest ever UFC champion. She's still got time on her side to do that. And she's in a weight class where if she strings two or three wins together, she's going to get a title shot. So I think she gets a big win against Alexa Grasso this weekend, I think the hype might just start to pick up again. I'm going to take her to win this by sort of second, third round stoppage.
Macy Barber for Simon Head. All right. Dan Tom, you're up next.
Yeah, a lot of great points. For me, this, you know, I hate to say the values on the dog because you could just paint that over any matchup. But more specifically, even though I'm going to pick Grasso here, I don't disagree with what Simon's saying as far as there's value on Barber. Barber inherently there's going to be value if you can get that plus money sign because Barber was actually opened as the favorite. The public quickly corrected it and pushed Grasso to a slight favorite. So the line did a flipperoo. Now money has been steadily trickling in on Barber. She's the more athletic side of the party. However, it's tricky, right? They've only really fought one 125 pounder, even though Barber is the more experienced of the weight class. They were all former, like Barber, former straw weights, even though I don't know how Barber made that weight. So it's really difficult. And when they did face straw weights, Barber lost and Grasso won. Now Grasso took some shots and was a bit more hittable maybe than she should have been against an opponent, Ji-Yeon Kim, early, but again, an actual flyweight, whereas Barber, who, yes, she was injured, but before that was getting handily beaten by Roxy Modafferi. You know, and that's what worries me, and not just the injury, the year layoff, not fighting in the pandemic, but also worries me the mental. We're listening to a lot of these interviews. I know you guys have listened to the ones over on MMAJunkie.com, right? And in the scrums, she talks about the loss, but more about the injury than the loss, and not really giving credit where credit's due. Now, she is young. Expect her to mature in many ways, both as a fighter, as a person. Don't condemn her for any of these things, folks. That being said, I don't like that's kind of a flag to me. So I'm going to go with Grasso to actually pull away late. I know Barber traditionally does, again, to Simon's point, which I don't disagree with. However, I think Grasso is a slower starter. And Barber's athleticness, she'll be the more athletic party. She'll be the more willing party. I think it'll get her a good start. You're going to have to watch out for that left hand from a southpaw stance. But I don't like the wrestling. I'm not as confident in the prep. Question marks on both sides. But give me Grasso by decision, George.
Gotcha, bud. All right. Whew, this is a tough one because I've kind of gone back and forth all week. And I love Grasso's footwork. I love her hands. I'm really, really homering a little bit for the Mexican-born fighters for one of them to grab a belt. Now, I think Brandon Moreno's the closest to it. For years, I thought Pantera was. But I think Brandon Moreno's the guy. He came close. He fought to a draw. As far as Irene Aldana, she came up short last year. I think Grasso, if she rounded out her game, her ground game, to be as tight as her stand-up, at strawweight, I think she could be it too. At flyweight, I'm still not sure about those 10 pounds, but we'll see because she was successful in her debut. But Macy Barber, man, is a freight train. And yes, she was losing to Roxy. That was a good payday, by the way. I think I took the dog in that one. So the knee going out or not, Roxy was going to have her hand raised that night. But again, going back to Barber, man, she's pretty fearless. She's unorthodox. She's not as clean on her feet as Grasso is. But make no mistake, I think she's pretty savage, you know, like when she's on top and ground and pound. The question is, how does she get the fight there? I've stated, I think, on Junkie Radio recently that her takedowns aren't really like conventional. They don't come from wrestling. But then I made probably the cardinal sin, which is to watch embedded and go, hey, look, there's a nice single right there, you know, because she's obviously doing some drilling. One of those embedded, I think it was three or four, was kind of following her a little bit more around. But I'll tell you what, it was a pretty clean technique, you know, and I don't know. I guess that was that little extra that I needed to sway back to Barber, who is the dog. And I wanted to give you guys at the end an all underdog parlay. So I am going to go with Macy Barber because I think if she gets the fight to the ground, I'm not really too thrilled with Grasso and how casual she can be from her back. I wish there was better takedown defense and more of more wanting to get to the feet a lot quicker rather than, I think, exploring possible submissions from the ground. Anyway, so I'm going to go with Macy Barber on this one. How about you guys? Are you with Dan Tom? Are you with Simon and I? Is it going to be 2-2? Or are you going to leave Dan Tom on an island? He's the 2020 champion in the MMA Junkie picks. So it's scary for us to go against them. But then Simon Head's going, oh, yeah, well, guess who won it the year before? We got two titans here joining Goz and I. But Goz, back to you. What are you going to do?
It's late in the UK. Simon's getting tired. You know, I got to maybe throw that out there, but I'm going to go with Dan Tom here. I think Alexa Grasso is going to be my pick. Macy Barber, power, size. She can definitely put that to work, especially something we brought up earlier in this broadcast, smaller cage. There's less room for Alexa Grasso to be able to move around and use the angles that she likes to use. So if Macy can capitalize on that and back her up against the cage, it'll be a long night for Alexa Grasso. But I think Alexa's going to be able to do it. I think she's going to be able to kind of mind her surroundings, know where she's at, and use that smaller cage. A lot of speed, and just I think she's going to sprint out there and really make Macy fight at her pace. Because anybody who's coming back from an injury, it does take a little bit of time to just kind of get used to that environment again. And I think Alexa's going to maybe try and capitalize on that a little bit. So I'm going to take Alexa Grasso, but I don't think the other guys are crazy for taking Macy Barber.
Right on. All right. Let's go to the main event. The main event, of course, Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. This is a clear 1-2 in the welterweight division. There is no politics. Nobody's coming in, you know, out of nowhere as a former champ from another division, as a UFC favorite. No, both guys are in their spot. Kamaru's already been defending the belt, and Gilbert Burns has a nice 6-fight win streak going. Over top guys, including a former champion in Tyron Woodley. So we can't dispute that Burns did not earn his shot. Kamaru Usman is around -260 to -280. Gilbert Burns about +220, +240. All right, we're back to Dan Tom leading off. Dan, who do you like in this one?
This is interesting, man. I came in leaning toward Burns, and I still believe that he's live, but I ended up picking Usman. Now, if you know, and I believe I'm not the only one with this read, I was listening to our colleague's podcast, John Morgan, the MMA Roadshow, and a lot of people seem to be having a similar read where I come away from these interviews, guys, and you guys hopefully maybe can include this with your breakdowns on what you think, regardless if it lines up with your pick. But I feel like Burns got the better of the two in training. However, as we know, training is training and fights are fights. You know, I cited Matt Brown versus Mike Pyle on that big Fox debut main card, right? In my podcast where, you know, Mike Pyle may or may not have gotten the better of Matt Brown when Matt Brown came into Extreme Couture out fresh off Tough. But Mike Pyle was that guy, as much as I love him, not trying to knock him. He was that the guy that was referred to as the gym fighter, would watch these guys in the gym. And when they met, you know, maybe wasn't the same, right? We could have a similar effect here. We could have a crazy stalemate. So just the whole, like, training partner intangible for me, whether you're picking this fight like we're doing here for fun, or you're, like, trying to, you know, lay some bets on there for any of the audience that are interested in that sort of thing. I would be careful about being too confident on either side, on either angle. I'm going to pick Usman. I think it goes long, and I think we get a lot of clinch warfare. You know, I picked Gilbert to beat Woodley. Like George mentioned, you know, Burns had an impressive fight against Woodley, but not only Woodley, not maybe the same fighter, but less of an action fighter. So I picked the more action-oriented guy. However, in this matchup, I think the small cage actually may go against the action-based fighter in Burns and may open up more clinching opportunities for Usman. So it might not be a fun one for Usman or his fan base, but I do have Usman getting his hand raised. We'll see.
All right, Goes, who do you like in this one?
I'm going to go Kamaru Usman on this one, but I'm kind of the reverse. I've been getting swayed a little bit more towards Gilbert Burns. But the thing about Kamaru Usman is you know exactly what he's going to do. There's no surprises there. The thing is, he's so good at it that it's just kind of unstoppable. The guy that did have the most success, though, was Colby Covington, I thought. And I feel like Gilbert Burns can do a lot of what Colby Covington can do, except I don't know that he has the gas tank that Colby Covington has to be able to do that over five rounds, possibly. I think that's where Kamaru Usman just seems the best people. So I think there'll be moments for Gilbert Burns in this fight. But I really think that at the end of the day, I think Kamaru Usman's the one that's just going to apply the pressure. And eventually, I think he may either finish him late fourth, early fifth. But I do feel like this fight might end in some kind of finish.
All right. Simon, you're next.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one, because normally when you take a look at a fight, you look at the two fighters on paper, you say, who can win the fight in the most areas? Who has the most opportunities to win the fight? Where are the advantages here? Submissions, you look at Gilbert Burns. Punch power, you probably look at Gilbert Burns. Explosiveness, you probably look at Gilbert Burns. Speed, Gilbert Burns. But I'm picking Kamaru Usman, right? Kamaru Usman ties everything together. A bit GSP-esque in as much as he might not be the best at any one thing. I think he even said it himself this week. He said, I might not be the best kickboxer. I might not be the best wrestler. I might not be the best submission guy. But when you put it all together, no one can beat me. And that's what we've seen in the UFC so far. Gilbert Burns seems on paper to have all the tools to get the job done. The one question mark is that five-round championship duration. He's only gone five rounds once. That was in a blowout win over Tyron Woodley, you know, very one-sided fight. So he hasn't been pushed over five rounds. That five rounds pretty much was all Gilbert Burns. That's not going to happen against Kamaru Usman on Saturday night. And I think Kamaru Usman, I think he'll have to weather an early storm. I think Burns is going to come out of the traps really fast, look to bank maybe the first, second round, really push the pace on him. But I think once we get into those championship rounds, I think we're going to see that experience really kick in. And I think a late finish or a win on the scorecards for Kamaru Usman. I think Burns is a really difficult challenge. The fact they've trained together for so long just adds another layer of spice and intrigue to it. But I do think that I find it hard to find a way that Kamaru Usman's actually going to get beat in this fight. He's as well-rounded a champion as we've got in the UFC right now. And I think he's one of the most underrated champions we've got in the UFC as well. I think he deserves a lot more kudos than he gets. I'm taking him to win. And if you push me for an outcome, I'll say on the scorecards, I think he'll win it by unanimous decision.
And guys, last I checked, is Henry Hooft, he's still not cornering neither guy, even though Usman has appeared to move on now to be with Trevor Whitman. Hooft is still hanging back. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That's unfortunate, because a lot of these coaches the journey, man. That's the beauty of it all, you know, the ups and the downs. He got to experience that with Kamaru Usman. And I understand that first time around, he didn't want to be a part of it. But this fight was supposed to happen now. I think we're not pushing a year, but we're at least three-fourths of a year in. And the guy clearly isn't returning, or at least that's what it looks like. I don't know. I guess he's his own man, and you know, who can question a great coach like Henry Hoof? But it's unfortunate that if Burns does win, and Burns is the guy that has stayed at Sanford MMA, that he won't be able to enjoy it. But I guess maybe that also says how much loyalty he has to his guys, and that also goes a long way with me. But all right, guys, you guys like Usman? Yes, you got to. You know, Simon was laying out the boxes to tick. Cardio though goes to Usman. At least in my opinion, I thought Colby was going to out cardio Usman, and Usman, he answered, you know, some questions there. 2-2, arguably going into the fifth round. And not only did he finish him, he broke his jaw. He proved that he had the cardio, and of course he's got the wrestling advantage, the experience in bigger fights advantage, but not by much, because Burns has been fighting some really, really good competition in both 155 pounds and 170 pounds. Usman, I think Burns has a little bit more of that pop, you know, that actual pop, flashier pop, and I think more of the different weapons that I think he can hit Usman with, but Usman still packs some power punches. So it's going to be a close one. I just think that the odds should have been closer. You put a gun to my head, I'm probably with you guys, because I think Usman can GSP him. I love that reference. But I'm an underdog player, guys. I just can't pull away from it. And it's caused me to never once be competitive in the snap picks. I'm always at the bottom, but God damn it, I'm leading right now. So I'm going to stick to my formula. I'm sticking to the dogs. I'm going with Gilbert Burns. Somehow I think he can maybe either get a back take in there or just get a strike and even get the finish. However, that wouldn't be the demise of Kamaru Usman. That guy is so focused that I think he'll be a top player for a long time. And if he beats Burns, man, he's well on his way, because he's beating a lot of the top cats. So Burns is who I ride with in this one.
Can I ask you to consider something?
Sure.
Okay. If you remain at the top of the staff picks, granted,
I can't. I suck. These three guys are awesome. Dan, I mean, that guy knows everything about every fight that's taken place in the last 20 years. So there's no way I can beat these guys, but I'm going to enjoy the ride right now. I even got a little one fight cushion, I think. I couldn't believe it. I had to go like this when Matt Erickson revealed him. I was like, oh, I am? Who, me?
If you do it, though, at the expense of us, if we were to do this more regularly, we would be the only show that only champions. We would never involve any of the other guys, which would piss them off. And then also, Team Radio would be... We would be like
The Junkie Radio crew. That's right. So I gotta really, really focus myself. But I got a formula going right now. I can't let it out. But it's so working.
Like, if Farah or somebody goes, hey, I'd like to give this a try, we'd have to go.
come back when you win the title.
Yeah, no title, no play.
Hey man, George is overdue. George is overdue.
Yeah. I'm just going to say one thing I want to chuck in about this fight, and I meant to mention it, and it completely bypassed me when I went down a different tangent. Gilbert Burns, we know that he's probably the superior striker, right? Let me take you back to UFC 226. I was there for that fight where he took on Gilbert Burns versus Dan Hooker. And Gilbert Burns had gone on a little run. He picked up back-to-back knockouts, and he was feeling himself a little bit when it came to his punch power. And Dan Hooker told us in media day, he said, he's fallen in love with his striking, and that's going to cost him on fight night. And that is exactly what happened. Dan Hooker picked him apart, knocked him out. And eventually, I think he had one more fight at 155. That probably was the moment where Gilbert Burns thought, you know what? 170 might not be the worst idea here. So if I'm going to start getting clipped, I want to be as strong as I can possibly be. Reason I'm saying that is he has shown a little bit of fallibility when he gets caught clean. And we know that Kamaru Usman can pack a punch. He might not be a one-punch knockout artist, but just ask Colby Covington how he's getting on. You know, ask him if his teeth are all okay and his jaws are right now, because they certainly weren't after UFC 245. So I wouldn't rule out a stoppage victory for Kamaru Usman, because the guy can bang. He's big and strong at the weight class. And let's not forget, Gilbert Burns has moved up and he's been knocked out by lightweights in the past. So that's just something to bear in mind if they do start going toe-to-toe and Gilbert starts throwing those hands with a little bit of abandon. If Kamaru clips him, don't be surprised if he goes down.
All right. All right, before we wrap up, I wanted to give you guys a chance. If there's anything from the undercard, like Hinch and Gastelum or anything that you guys wanted to just throw out there, a fight that you just feel like you maybe handicapped it well or you feel pretty confident about that maybe we should take a look at. I'll go around the board. Dan, is there anything you like? And folks, don't forget, Dan's podcast, Protect Your Neck. You got to get it. I subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Leave them a review as well. Those reviews go a long way. It triggers the algorithm. But I'm telling you, I'm not leading you to a shitty podcast at all. It is money. He really, really breaks stuff down in depth. He's got some really, really funny voices as well. I think the best part is at the very end when I think by then he's just the last screws on is coming out and he starts doing all of his voices as he gives you his final run of the plays. It's usually pretty funny, so I like it.
it's okay. I kind of go off the screws in the beginning with some anime and ruin some Disney classics for my audience. But aside from that, I appreciate the plug because I wouldn't be breaking down fights on my podcast if it wasn't for you guys breaking down fights on your shows. So the fact that you guys are keeping all the MMA Junkie iterations alive, from the awesome interviews at the top that I mentioned to these little breakdown panels, man. Anytime you guys want, I'm game for you guys. You know that. Appreciate the plugs. George is overdue for his run to the top. And I will just say real quick, two low-key fights that you guys probably won't mention. And since I actually took shots on them and wrote them up as gambling plays, I love me some Jillian Robertson, man. I really do. But I like Miranda Maverick, who is now down to like minus 135 from an initial opener of minus 225. I think that stylistically that she could pull away that from that one in a couple of ways. And then I also took a shot for dog money. I took Phil Rowe, man. This guy brings the same height and reach as John Jones in a welterweight. Was real impressed. Gave him an A coming through as an underdog against Leon Shabazian at the Contender Series. Faces Gabe Green, who is, you know, just seems like one of those tough Latin warrior dudes who's just going to scrap for your money. Overachiever, if you will, like an Ian Heinisch. However, he's fought most of his career at lightweight. And again, it's going against a real big long striker who is a legit Brazilian jiu-jitsu brown belt in Phil Rowe. Apparently a legit grappler on the scene, training with Souza, Machida, the Lima brothers. So let's see if Phil Rowe can come through.
My favorite, by the way, are the Russian accents, the German accents. And my all-time favorite is Lucy, Puddle of Love.
Oh, yeah, Puddle of Love.
All right, how about you, Simon Head? Anything you like from the prelims?
I'm never going to get to interview Lucy Puddle over the same way again, am I, after that? That's going to be a nightmare for me. For me, I think I like the Brian Kelleher-Ricky Simone fight just leaps off the page to me. I think if you were writing down and putting it in an envelope, this is the fight that's going to be fighting the night, that's the one that I've got my non-existent money on. I think that's going to be all action. The fact that they're fighting a weight class above, they haven't had to do that tough weight cut. They're going to be absolutely full of energy on fight night. They're going to be in peak condition. This is what MMA is supposed to look like, in my opinion. Guys going in at 100%. You know, they've not had to drain themselves. They're going in at 100%. It's a mini rivalry that seems to have cooked up over the last few months. They've called each other out and it's been a bit like sliding doors. They haven't quite been able to actually meet in the cage. Now it's happening. Simone's coming in on a 3-week turnaround. I don't think that's going to hurt him though. I'm leaning towards Ricky Simone in that one. I just think that his all-round game and his striking prowess, I think, might just shade it over Kelleher, who is obviously very dangerous, but that's going to be an absolute banger for as long as it lasts. That one should be a cracker.
All right, goes the Gator. Anything that jumps out at you from the bottom of the prelims?
I like Gastelum and Heinisch fight. I think that's going to be really fun, but when you look at the way Gastelum is built, right, it reminds me a lot of Akhmedov. It's got that same kind of stocky build. I think he's going to be able to do a lot of things that Akhmedov was very, very good at in that fight. I think it's going to give Hinch some problems. It's the type of fight where really one guy, I think when they booked it, they said, you know, if Hinch wins here, then I think he's going to take that next step. But if if Gastelum wins here, then it puts him right back into the mix, right? So it's a very interesting fight, but I think Kelvin Gastelum, initially I was going to go with Heinisch on this one. I thought he was going to surprise everyone, but I really think Kelvin Gastelum is going to give him some problems.
Well, you kind of stole my thunder because I was just going to say, I think Gastelum bounces back. I think his back's to the wall. I have said I think he's playing with house money at middleweight because eventually he was going to return to welterweight, a la Robbie Lawler kind of being away for 5 years and then, you know, making a return, although I think Lawler was even gone longer. But Heinsch is no joke. I'm really going to just sit back and enjoy this fight. I just feel like Gastelum knows, I wouldn't say taking things more serious, but when you go the distance and have a fight of the year with Israel Adesanya, I think you probably believe, you know, maybe your own hype a little bit much. And it's not that Darren Till is crappy. I mean, he's an excellent middleweight as well. But then I think the Joker Hermanson fight, you could look at Kelvin Gastelum and see that he probably undervalued the, you know, how good Hermanson is and maybe how good the other guys are versus how good he had been performing as a middleweight. So I think that was a good like reality check for him. I think he's back on this one. He seems hungry. I'm going to go with Kelvin Gastelum here. And I think he stops him, TKO. So that's my play. All right. My parlay for the weekend is Macy Barber and Gilbert Burns to open. What's open? That means, dude, guys, there's fights every weekend, all right? You don't have to panic yourself into always getting, you know, your parlay done in 1 week. I've started to now stagger mine, and I'm going to give you guys one from the Blades Lewis weekend that will fill in to this one. But let's get to 2-0 and leave it open. Another thing you can do is just do a two-fight parlay, and then we'll grab all of it and throw it on the third fighter, and the math almost works out the same. So there's different ways to do it, but the lesson here is you don't have to force a three-team parlay if you don't want. If you only like two, then just do two. If you really like three because you don't trust yourself that you're not going to, you know, spend the money or maybe you're going to pull some back, then just leave it to open. Explore that. A lot of sites give it. So that's what I'm going with is Barber and Burns to open, and I'm going to close it on the fight card with Curtis Blaydes and Derek Lewis. So there you have it. One last run for the guys. Simon Head, go give him a like over on Facebook. I saw that earlier. We're all going to get a little bit more active on all of our social media. Simon, is there anything else you'd like to plug?
Yeah, definitely. Get on board with my podcast as well. I've got a podcast as well, The Brit Pack. Myself and former MMA junkie contrib, Shamat Karsandu. He's based over in Toronto, Canada right now. So it's a transatlantic podcast. We do that. Record that every Monday night. Comes out every Tuesday. Just two English guys shooting the breeze and picking apart the fights that we've just seen, previewing the best stuff that's coming up and just talking about the big stories of the week. It's a good chat every week, and we're looking to do some big things with it. We're audio only at the moment, but probably within the next month or so, we're going video. So, yeah, please do check that out. TheBritPackMMA.com. That'll give you all the links to everywhere you need to go.
I apologize, brother. Was that in effect and then took a slight hiatus and now it's back?
When you say slight, it was about 4 years, yeah. But yeah, it was. It's been away for a bit, and work commitments have changed and everything. We're all, you know, we're back up and running, and it's here to stay now.
Yeah, somehow when I've gone from one laptop to the next, I just lose stuff. I lose subscriptions, and then I realize, wait a minute, that's why it hasn't been coming, and I'm just poor on my follow up. So apologies, Dan Tom, and of course. You're also doing some work outside of Junkie with my man Jordan, right? What's going on? What else would you want to plug aside from Protect Your Neck?
The two plays which I gave you here were written up at linemovement.com. Thanks for already the plug on Protect Your Neck. And I'll just add in a plug for the Brit Pack. No shame, George. I had to resubscribe too. But for me, because I'm just, you know, really uncultured over here, and all the podcasts start to sound the same. Like for people that haven't listened to the Brit Pack, for me, like him and Shamat Kart's like it's like my English MMA roadshow. It's just a nice to get some different cultured voices in my ear from that side of the pond. So go give them some love, and thank you guys for the too much love that you guys give me, to be honest. So,
all right, and then what you got cooking, man? A lot of people don't know you got producing chops. You're behind this, just as behind the scenes as Abby and Kenny, and then of course you appear on camera for the spinning backlick. What else you got going on? I think you have another video franchise you're getting ready to release, right?
I got a couple things that are kind of can't talk about one of them right now, but I did give Simon a little preview and he was laughing. But one thing that I do work on is Legend to Legend with Burt Watson. And we recently did one with Rampage Jackson, which when you really watch that video, that dude is rarely chill, but he was chill for the whole interview. And he was telling you so many things that go back even before Pride, all that, how he was treated by Pride officials and the UFC, what he thinks of Dana White. So many good things came out of that interview. And we have another one that we've already recorded that's, I can't say who it is, but it's somebody we haven't seen in a while. And it was a really, really good interview that actually made a little tear come down my eye as we were recording it. But yeah, I got that going on. And then there was one other thing I wanted to bring up. I'm just so weird because when I see Simon's face, I automatically think I have 1 minute on the clock and I got to get this thing out. I can't remember what the last thing was, but yeah, don't forget to tune in tomorrow for our watch along. Gorgeous George and I, we're going to be doing a watch along for UFC 258. And I think that's it.
Catch us on Patreon. We also have the Triple G podcast. And thank you all for tuning in here on a Friday. We hope to do it more often. Enjoy the fights. Go out there and be a champion.